I'll take the L on Gronk. When he got signed, I was not optimistic that he would be more than like a touchdown or a bust. He'd be a good tight end every like 5 weeks. And yeah, some of these guys missed time for the offense, but Gronk just looked better than I thought he would. So I'm taking the L on that. I was very, very wrong about that.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, of course, presented by the FTN Network. Derek Brown not here. He is at FSGA on Monday and Tuesday. He'll be back on Wednesday. So I'm hosting here. Adam Pfeiffer here. Glad to have everybody back. Got to wrap up the divisional previews here on the podcast. We started them, you know, about a week or so ago. Last division left is the NFC South, and it's fitting with the Julio Jones trade. But rather than do it by myself and ride solo, bringing in a colleague, friend of the show, Chris Meany from FTN. Meany, haven't talked to you in forever, it feels like, man. but obviously, Meany doing all the great video and audio and written and everything content over at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, Mean Streets. I was just on there with him on Monday. Meany, what's up, man? Thanks for filling in. What's going on?
Yeah, man. Happy to be here, dude. I love this show. You guys are fantastic. You're pumping out amazing content for us over at FTN. So happy to fill in. D-Bro, I'm sure, representing us very well over at FSGA. And yeah, I mean, this is an intriguing division. So looking forward to this. And I appreciate you jumping on Mean Streets on Monday. We chatted about Julio Jones and, you know, looking forward to getting into today, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good time. And yeah, it just... It's kind of funny because we obviously talked about that on Mean Streets and we'll have to talk about it again here. But yeah, it's going to be before we get started, it's going to be a really fun, loaded week on the podcast. We have obviously Meany here talking NFC South with me. I'm also we're recording this Tuesday afternoon. I'll also be recording Tuesday night. So later on this evening with Chris Allen from 4for4, we're going to be talking about some early bust candidates. That'll be up for Wednesday. And then D-Bro will be back Thursday with me. And then Friday, John Daigle is coming on the podcast to talk about some early breakout candidates for the 2021 season. And it's getting fun, man. We're seeing the new faces on new teams in their, you know, uniforms and in mini camps and actually running routes. So it's that time of year where we're going crazy over players running around in shorts. But, that's part of the territory. So. But let's get to it, man. NFC South, and I was going to start with the Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but let's tie in this Julio thing together, man. Let's start with the Atlanta Falcons, obviously addressing the huge news that we've been kind of waiting for, but Julio Jones officially traded to the Tennessee Titans. We talked about the implications for Tennessee on Mean Streets with you, so you guys can definitely check that out over at the FTN Network YouTube channel. But let's talk about it, obviously, for the Falcons, because they are the team in the NFC South here. I mean, expectations for the Falcons without Julio Jones, Matt Ryan under center. Calvin Ridley's obviously been massively hyped and for good reason, and now he's looking like he has the potential to be, and I'm sure in a lot of people's rankings will be like a top three receiver, but he's definitely a top five guy. What do you expect and what do you make of this Falcons passing attack now that Julio Jones is officially out of town?
Yeah, it's going to be weird, man, to not see Julio with Atlanta on Sundays. And I know you love him. He's one of my favorite wide receivers to ever play the game. It's a huge loss. And, you know, you're right. We've been waiting for it for quite some time now, whether this guy was going to be traded or not. And I just part of me thought, man, if you're really going to rebuild here and there's not a lot of time with Matt Ryan, you're going to get a great player in the draft like you did Pitts. I thought if they were going to move on from Julio, that maybe they would try to draft a quarterback and look to the future, but this is still going to be a team that I think puts up points offensively because their defense is not great, and they're going to be in a lot of shootouts this year. And from a fantasy standpoint, I mean, Calvin Ridley is, there's no question he's going to be a top five wide receiver. I have him as wide receiver 4. He could move up to 3. This is a guy that I thought passed all kinds of tests last year without Julio Jones. I had some questions whether he could handle top coverage, what he would be like without Julio. And he was just like a ball hawk, man. He got so many targets, almost 1,400 yards, 143 targets, nine TDs. He's been a touchdown machine over the 3 years here, 26 touchdowns in 3 years with the Falcons. Matt Ryan led the league in passing attempts last year. He's been top three in each of the last three seasons. So you got to imagine that Ridley is going to get so many targets here. Kyle Pitts is going to get some targets at the running back position. They just haven't had a back over the past couple of years. Like, Todd Gurley wasn't good last year. Like, he was scoring touchdowns early, but he just wasn't good, and he's not going to be around. So in comes Mike Davis, is another guy that proved last season he could catch a few balls. He's an interesting target, I think, in fantasy leagues. I would be fine if he was my third RB. I know he's kind of going right around RB 24, 25, but if he somehow, if you left your draft and he was your third, you can roll him as a flex play in PPR formats. He could be decent for you. You can catch 40 plus balls. I wouldn't be shocked with that. So this team is rebuilding. Defense is not great, but they're going to be in games. Like, Matt Ryan's going to continue to chuck, Pfeiffer.
Yeah. I mean, he's always among the league leaders in, you know, passing attempts and yardage. So Calvin Ridley, I mean, like, he was good with Julio, but in the games without him, I mean, he was over a 30% target share. He was well over double-digit targets per game. Yeah, and yeah, they had Kyle Pitts, who's going to play a lot of, you know, wide receiver, essentially. But, you know, Ridley is clearly the number one in this offense. I moved him up. He's my wide receiver five. So, like, I think that's going to be a relatively popular spot for him in a lot of people's rankings, is that wide receiver five spot after Adams, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, and Tyreek Hill. And I think it's absolutely warranted and probably the right spot for him. But Matt Ryan, I mean, I was really, you know, before the Julio trade rumors surfaced, I was very interested in Matt Ryan as a bounce back candidate, because Julio only played, you know, nine games last year. You know, the offense obviously still has pieces with what would have been Julio, Ridley, and Kyle Pitts. But now he's kind of like a guy you probably don't even draft, which is weird to say, because he's been like the poster boy for like the late round quarterback, you know, movement. Like, if you're drafting a quarterback late in the past, it's been Matt Ryan, but his numbers without Julio last year were very bad. I mean, in games that Julio was active, he averaged around 22 fantasy points per game, well over 309 passing yards per game. In the games Julio was out, in those seven games, under 260 passing yards per game and just over 18 fantasy points per game. So, like, that's a massive drop. And I know adding Kyle Pitts will help, because, you know, last year when Julio was out, it was Ridley and it was Russell Gage or Zacchaeus, or, you know, the few games Hayden Hurst was good. But still, to lose one of the best receivers to ever play the game, it's an obvious downtick for him. So it's like, I moved, you know, Matt Ryan, before the Julio trade, I had him ahead of guys like Tannehill. That's an obvious switch I made. But, like, even guys like below there, like, I would much rather have, let me look. I'd much rather have guys like down all the way down here. Like, I'd rather take a shot at this point on somebody like Ryan Fitzpatrick, or maybe even Roethlisberger, just because you're getting the same volume, but you know that the skill position players for Pittsburgh are going to be great. Like, Kyle Pitts should be great. We know Ridley is great, but, like, there's still a little bit more uncertainty. Matt Ryan's a better quarterback, but what do you think of Matt? Like, is Matt Ryan even on your radar?
I think he'll make for a I'm with you. You know, about a month ago, I was like, okay, Matt Ryan could finish as a top 12 quarterback and not really getting drafted there. I mean, heck, even with the struggles down the stretch last season, to your point, he finished as QB 12, 17.5 fantasy points per game. But you're also dead on in talking about the change when Julio wasn't there. There were a lot of games. I mean, there's one game here against the Saints where he had 5 fantasy points. Against Vegas, he had 13, then followed up against the Saints 12, and then the Chargers 7. Like, that was a stretch from week 11 to week 14 where this dude needed another weapon to be a productive fantasy quarterback. But you're not drafting him now as your one in a standard 12. I think in the super flex league, you know, he's going to fall down the board maybe to the late teens. It's very possible guys like, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Fitzpatrick, you know, people like Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins has been, you know, an underrated fantasy quarterback over the past couple of years. He's got two solid weapons and, you know, a tight end, Irv Smith. So I could see people drafting Kirk ahead of him. So if you get him late teens as your second quarterback, you leave, you know, your super flex league with your draft with three quarterbacks and he's one of them. I think it's okay, because the attempts, as we talked about, will be there and there'll be some learning curves for Pitts. He's going to be an awesome player in this league, but the passing attempts will certainly be there. And what we were talking about with Calvin Ridley is you mentioned the targets down the stretch. There's no question they're going to be double digit on, you know, on average, I think, this year. But he hit the century mark in four of his final five games last season without Julio. So I think he could do enough to maybe have Matt Ryan as like a guy who averages maybe two passing touchdowns a game. And I think two passing touchdowns a game and a guy who's probably going to throw, I don't know, 35 plus times a game, realistically, there's some value in that as, you know, maybe a low end quarterback too. But you had to bump him down as well after the Julio news. You just have to.
Yeah, I would much rather have, well, the volume won't be the same, but I'd much rather have Baker Mayfield and Kirk Cousins than Matt Ryan at this point. Russell Gage, Zacchaeus, you know, late round, you know, dart throws. Russell Gage, I guess, more than a dart throw because he's going to be, he's shown, you know, signs of fantasy relevance, and this team's going to throw the ball a lot. He's going to be on the field a lot. But with Kyle Pitts, what are you expecting from him in his rookie year? Because the talk about Kyle Pitts, and we talked about it on Mean Streets yesterday, is that, like, okay, on one end, he's one of if not the most ridiculous tight end prospect we've ever seen come into the NFL. Yeah. And then at the other end of the spectrum, but tight ends rarely perform in their rookie year. So kind of what side are you on? Are you in the middle? Because when we talked, we were both kind of in the middle, right? Like, we don't think Kyle Pitts is going to be bad by any means, but where he's going to go in draft, especially now that Julio is gone, you know, and with this trade happening before most, pretty much all of fantasy drafts, like, it's just going to make his ADP skyrocket to where, like, I've talked about it. I'd still rather have TJ Hockenson and Mark Andrews, and there's a very good chance that Kyle Pitts goes ahead of those guys now.
Yeah, absolutely there is. I've taken a look at what we discussed on Monday with Mean Streets is that you're really where he's going and where he's going to go, and it's just like a rocket ship, right? Like the FTN rocket ship emoji that we always tweet out and bump out in our Slack. It just seems like that's the direction his ADP is going to go. It's going to skyrocket. Yeah, typically tight ends, I mean, it takes some time, right? I mean, we're going to see, I think, a true breakout season from TJ Hockenson, and it's been a couple years, and, you know, he's going to be loaded for targets. It's a guy that I would rather have as well. I got him as tight end five. Andrews right behind him. I could see myself, you know, bumping Andrews ahead of him just slightly. I think with some additions in Baltimore, we could see Andrews' target share come down a little bit. But again, the volume and the opportunity is going to be there for Pitts. He's a freak. He's a special talent. I don't know if we'll be able to, you know, he may be the outlier when we talk about tight ends and taking some time for some of these guys, but I'm not going over the top in terms of like projections. I have this guy under 1,000 yards. I got him for, you know, just over 70 catches, 73 catches, 850 yards. I think he could be a touchdown beast, seven or eight touchdowns. I mean, that is top five tight end, right? It is. But for the fact that I'm looking at NFFC drafts over the last 5 weeks, right now he's tight end four, just after Kittle, ADP 62. The min pick is 25. So people are willing in, you know, a 12-team league. This guy is an early third. And I just don't think I'll ever get there. I just don't think so. I'd rather take a running back at that point. Maybe there's still a bell cow back at the end of early three, end of two, that I'd be more willing to attack. And that's kind of the way I go about my draft strategy. There's some guys even outside that you and I talked about again on Mean Streets, like an Irv Smith, who potentially, you know, is in for a breakout season. If Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback again, Robert Tonyan's going to fall outside the top 12 tight ends. I mean, this guy was a top 10 tight end last season. So there's some other guys that I think I'd rather have, but, you know, from a dynasty standpoint, I mean, if you got them, you're loving it because, well, I guess we'll see what happens with the quarterback position in years, but this is a guy that I think will be a tight end that consistently just gets 1,000 yards. Like, it just may take some time.
Yeah, he's going to be an absolute difference maker at the position, without a doubt. Let's close out Atlanta with the backfield. Todd Gurley was obviously just dreadful last year. You could tell he just laterally, he could not get it done. Then down the stretch, you know, they were playing pretty much everybody. Not over him necessarily, but, you know, over him in certain games and down the stretch in games, like Todd Gurley was not even on the field. It was
even a factor. Ito
Smith and Brian Hill. Now he's obviously gone. They bring in Mike Davis. And I think a lot of us in the industry were shocked that with nine draft picks in April's NFL draft, Atlanta didn't address the running back position at all. I mean, right now, they're going into the season with their, you know, their backup running backs as, you know, Quadri Allison, Javion Hawkins, who was their UDFA, And then, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, I guess. So yeah. What do you think of Mike Davis here? He was obviously productive as filling in for the injured Christian McCaffrey last year, got a lot of volume to start, and then his workload down the stretch of the season fell off a bit. And he wasn't incredibly efficient, you know, under 4 yards per carry, under 6 yards per touch. But again, opportunity is really what we care about, especially at this point of the draft where Mike Davis is kind of in that tier of running backs in fantasy where there is a drop off. It's like Mike Davis is and Miles Gaskin are in that range where it's like these are like the last two running backs you can draft that have right now, at the time of this recording, without a doubt, they're going into the season as the starting running back for their teams.
Yeah, you're spot on, man. Those are the last two that I look at when I've done a couple drafts already. And again, something that you and I chatted about Mean Streets, I like to have myself a couple bell cows. I typically start RB, RB, or RB wide receiver, RB. And, you know, if you don't, if you are, you know, a zero RB kind of guy, then, you know, these are the two that stand out is like kind of in that mid 20 range. There's Kareem Hunt, Gaskin, and then Mike Davis. And then one of the Arizona backs will be there if you wanted to go down that route, or one of the two from Denver. But we're talking about committees there now. I don't believe in any of the guys that you mentioned, like Olsen or you know, Hawkins maybe can step in and be something for them. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Like, he's not going to get those carries. And we look at Davis, and he's coming off a career season. I mean, it doesn't seem like all that much. Only 165 attempts, 642 yards. Yeah, sub 4 yards per attempt. But volume and opportunity. He caught 59 balls. He had 7 targets. We love that. We just talked about Matt Ryan. The defense is going to continue to be bad. They're going to be playing from behind a lot. It's going to allow Davis to step into some situations and be a borderline bell cow back. He never had a game with more than 20 carries last year, but he touched 18 twice. This is a guy who touched 14 in 6 of his games. And a lot of his games, man, he had targets. 2 grabs, 5, 3, 2, 4, 5, 5, 2, 9, 8, 8. Like, that's exciting from a fantasy standpoint. There's not a lot of guys going in the mid-20s that could touch the ball 22, 25 times and get 5 to 6 targets a game. I agree with the Russell Gage thing. I think he is very interesting. We've seen him in the role before. He could have a handful of targets. But realistically, this guy, Mike Davis, could be the third option for Matt Ryan.
And they were very run-heavy and close last year, which is why Gurley, before the back end of the season, he was salvaging his production by scoring touchdowns. Like, they were very run-heavy down there. They have Arthur Smith now, who's a huge proponent of, you know, setting up play action with the running game. So, everybody's talking about Ridley and Russell Gage, but like Mike Davis might be able to pick up a handful more receptions with Julio Jones gone too. So yeah, draft him as like a lower end two and feel better about starting him as a flex. But like, yeah, if he stays healthy and he doesn't get, some of the backups don't impress and he holds on to this job all year, he's going to walk into like top 15 production just because of the nature of the position. Not exactly the most exciting player to draft, but I mean, at that point, like, you feel better about his workload than Kareem Hunt or Travis Etienne or James Robinson or Absolutely. Probably the San Francisco running back. So that helps his ADP. And that's why he's going, in the fourth or fifth round, just because he's right now getting at worst 15 touches per game. We'll move on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But why is news breaking about you while we're recording?
Is there?
Yes,
there is.
Joining the FTN Network and FTN Data Ownership Group. Congrats, my friend.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm happy to be part of this squad, FTN. It was a no-brainer from day one when I was let go at The Athletic and Elliot reached out to me. I had done some work with him before at TQE, and you know, he got on a call with Brad and Jeff and Kevin and Stefano, and they didn't even need to sell me on anything. I was just sold on the people that they are and the people that we have here at the company. So this is it's cool, man. It's exciting. We're launching a new podcast tomorrow. Just really going into FTN data and all the stuff that FTN has to offer, man. So it's exciting to be part of this squad.
Yeah. Every time, it was the whole summer where it was like every day we were announcing somebody else joining the team, and you were, I mean, it was pretty much everybody, but you were definitely one of the hires that I saw, and I was like, that's lit. Like, that is someone I've not really worked with yet, and that's like my favorite thing about this site, too. I've started to work with, I've worked with Kalachi for years, but really other than that, it's been me being able to work with people for the first time and multiple times now. I mean, I hadn't worked with D-Bro at all. Now I'm doing a podcast with him four times a week. You know, I've done stuff with you a ton already. So it is an absolute treat and a pleasure to be a part of this team. And yeah, I mean, well-deserved. Congrats to you. And yeah, FTN data, FTN bets, like everything. It's just, like you said, the rocket ship GIF. It is taking off. And you talked about this on Mean Streets. It seems like it's only been a year change. I know. It's crazy.
It is. Yeah. Thank you, man, for the kind words. Yeah. It's only been, I mean, what did we launch just after, I mean, first week in July, like
right.
we pushed back a couple weeks, but yeah. What's so exciting about this is the team, it's the effort, the passion of everybody at FTN, where we all have the same goal here. And it's just to create content and, you know, help people out in fantasy and the betting world. And it's been a fun ride, and we have, you know, a lot of exciting things, you know, in the works. And yeah, man, it's cool because this year it feels like, okay, year two, but we weren't able to pump out all the football content. It was just like, okay, here's a company, boom, let's slap this, you know, your podcast together, everyone get together. Mm-hmm. And you know, draft season was just like happening. So now we're getting in, like, there's so much content at FTN, man. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Just to be part of this squad. Yeah. It's cool, man.
Yeah. Just anybody that's relatively new, just keep tuning in because it's only the beginning. It's obviously super exciting. Also exciting to be a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan right around now, coming off a Super Bowl victory season where Tom Brady comes in, just proves more and more why he's the GOAT, first year in this new offense, and he's, you know, top five quarterback, throws for a ton of touchdowns. I mean, 40 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, threw the ball 600 plus times. He was great. I mean, the pass heavy scheme, the downfield aerial attack, adding, you know, Antonio Brown and Gronk to an already great receiving duo of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Everybody, and I mean everybody, is back for Tampa Bay to run it back. So Brady falls in that interesting spot we talked about where it's like he's not being drafted as a top seven or eight guy. And in years past, you would say, okay, I'll just wait and take Tom Brady. But there are so many quarterbacks that offer production with their legs. Brady is obviously not one of them. So is that the only reason Tom Brady is going at like QB 10 right now? Because otherwise you'd say, okay, he's coming off a huge year. He's not slowing down despite how many times we think he is. And he still has arguably the best group of pass catchers and offensive players in the NFL to play with. So, is that the only reason Brady is not being drafted in that like 6 to 7 range, because of the lack of rushing and the fact that everybody ahead of him will present some form of rushing stats to the total stat line?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you look at Brady, you see the upside, obviously, you know, they got the two stud wide receivers and, you know, Gronk obviously showed that he still has something to offer. And if Antonio Brown, you know, if health is not an issue for him and, you know, he can stay, you know, discipline off the field, which he showed last year too. I mean, there seems to be a connection there with him and Brady. They seem to like each other, right? He was able to bring in Antonio, and there were some rumblings that, you know, Mike Evans or Godwin were a little upset, but Arian said, you know, we talked to those guys, they were fine with it, and they got a Super Bowl ring. So it's all business for this team. And it's scary, the fact that they started off pretty slow, right? And Brady too. I mean, there was picks in his first three of his first four games. You know, there were some questions about Tom, like there seems to be every September and October, if he has anything left to offer. And, you know, he's called out by Bruce Arians a couple times, but at, you know, the last 6 weeks of the season, this team just hit their stride and they were automatic. That's the one thing, the one concern I have from Brady from a fantasy standpoint is that rushing floor is not there. And if you look at the game log, there's just a couple games where he didn't have a great fantasy showing, where he ends up with two. Like, he had two fantasy points in one game last year against the Saints because he had three picks. But if Lamar Jackson has three picks and no touchdowns, he's ending up with what, 15 fantasy points potentially? Mm-hmm. Because of what he offers.
I think it was the one game against the Steelers this year or this past season where Lamar was like really struggling. He had like multiple turnovers, interceptions, fumbles, and you look, he's got like 19 fantasy points. Like,
yeah, that's the thing, right? The ceiling is high for Tom, there's no question, but the floor is not as high when you talk about a guy like Lamar, those first six quarterbacks that you mentioned that have some rushing upside. So I honestly don't know how many drafts I'll leave with Tom Brady. I'd like to get myself one of those top six, or, you know, wait it out a little bit more. We mentioned Tannehill. I like Tannehill. The fact that he's got Julio Jones there is, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty excited about.
And I just found the game. Tannehill. It was week 8 against Pittsburgh. Lamar had was 13 of 28 for 208 yards, two interceptions, two lost fumbles, 17 fantasy points.
There you go. It's a prime example, right? I mean, you just have the floor baked in. It's like starting with two free touchdowns with these rushing quarterbacks. And if they throw for a couple, it's icing on the cake.
Especially Lamar and Kyler, because they're
exactly
like they're getting 60 rushing yards, like 80% of their games.
Absolutely. It's baked in, man. I was looking through totals last year with both of those guys, like over unders and rushing yards. And it's like, wow, it's pretty high, but they're going to get there. So yeah, it's like starting with a free touchdown, but he's got all the weapons, Brady. I like them actually to win the division. They are favored -190 in certain spots to win the division. And I think their win total, is 11.5. It's kind of high here, but I think they're going to just be, like you mentioned, man, they brought back everyone. Like the entire band is back together, and that's tough to do. I can't really remember a lot of Super Bowl teams not, you know, bringing everybody back and not, you know, not just like one or two guys usually they can't bring back, but everyone seemed to restructure their contract. I mean, Gronk, Antonio, Ndamukong Suh, these guys all re-signed. They're going to be a force. I look at their schedule. They start off with Dallas, Atlanta. So there's going to be right off the hop, they're going to be scoring some points. They got a game against the Eagles. They got a game. They're going to play the NFC East. So they got a game against the Giants too. Your Bills, like that's going to be, you know, a high scoring game as well. They wrap up with the Panthers and the Jets. So they're going to put up points again.
That Bills game is going to tilt me because they're going to, I feel like the Bills are going to play well and win. And I'm going to be like, oh, why couldn't they have gotten that Super Bowl game? And we could have gotten an actual game instead of watching the Chiefs not be able to score.
Right.
But I digress. Brady for me is like, I struggle with this Tampa Bay offense, and I think it's 90% of the industry. Who's getting the ball? How are we getting consistent expectations? Chris Godwin missed time with a concussion. Then he had the finger injury, and Evans was obviously a great touchdown scorer, but his yardage game totals weren't consistent. Brady's getting all the points from this team. So if you're not sure who to target from this offense, yeah, go for Brady. Like I've been doing a ton of the best ball drafts and I'm with you. Like I haven't been like flocking to a lot of Tampa Bay players just because the backfield's a mess. We'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of receivers and it's like, okay, in best ball, you know, I feel like I need to get a Tom Brady stack with Godwin and Evans. That's what I did. And that makes a ton of sense because there's going to be games this offense scores 35 points and these guys all get theirs. So, but going back to the receivers, I mean, Mike Evans was obviously productive as hell last year, just over 1,000 yards. He's done it every year of his career. He continues to be incredible, somehow still underrated, despite how good he's been. 13 touchdowns, that number you expect probably to come down just because not only did he get a ton of short area targets. I mean, he had 14 targets from inside the 10-yard line. Only Davante Adams had more. He had 29% of his team targets from inside the 10-yard line. That was a top five number among qualified receivers. So if Godwin's healthy, you have Antonio Brown there for the full year, that number probably comes down, but you still have to project him to lead this team in touchdown receptions. So like this time last year, everybody was team Godwin, right? Everybody was this Brady and slot receiver narrative. And me and Debra talked about that a lot. It's like, it made Mike Evans undervalued because apparently everybody thinks Mike Evans and some of these vertical receivers literally run 9 routes every single play and they never run anything else. So I never understood that. But now flipping things into 2021, they're going right in the same range. I prefer other receivers, which is why I haven't really drafted them much yet. But how do you view these Tampa Bay receivers? Let's also add the fact that Antonio Brown was targeted a lot when he was there. Just under 7 targets per game. They used him in the screen game a lot. Over 30% of Antonio Brown's targets last year were screens. He is, like, they brought him back. He is legitimately going to be an important part of their offense.
Yeah, he is. I think I may have more Brown shares than any of them just because he's much cheaper. And you're spot on. Towards the end of the season, there was a game against the Falcons. I know it was week 17 where he had 14 targets and 11 grabs. He was more involved in the offense with the screen game as well. From a fantasy standpoint, I mean, they both took steps back, because Jameis, turned the ball over and, there were points all over the place and both of those guys got really targeted. But for Evans, from a fantasy point, he was just a point and a half shy of what he had averaged last season. And that's still 1,000 yards. He's had 1,000 yards in every year. He's been a touchdown beast, you know, at least 8 in 3 straight seasons and 5 seasons in the NFL, 5 of his 7. So he's going to continue to be a touchdown beast, but I don't know how much we can count on, you know, all the yardage. Like, he's a big play guy, and those games are going to happen where he does, you know, go over the top of the defense and he comes away with, you know, 100 yards and stuff. But there were some games, I'm looking at the game log too. You know, this one catch in week 1 for 2 yards, a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Week 3, 2 grabs for 4 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, how often is that going to happen? And you think, okay, well, if they get to the red zone and they're inside the 5, I mean, it could happen all the time if he just throws it up to Mike Evans. Like, that's very doable. But there were a lot of games last year with just 3 or 4 grabs and, you know, sub 65 yards. And the touchdowns really did help him out. But I agree with what you said. I think he's going to regress a little bit. I think I'd lean Godwin just because he does seem a little bit safer. And I felt like the connection that we all thought was going to happen, it really did happen towards the end. There was some time, like, they were just new to each other early on. And then there were some games where Godwin missed. Like, he didn't play week 2, he didn't play week 5, week 8. Like, there were some games that he missed. And then down the stretch, they really got on the same page. Touchdown in week 11, touchdown week 15, week 16 touchdown, 2 touchdowns week 17, some drop balls in the playoffs.
Was one of those games the Detroit game? Because that doesn't count because everybody scored.
I guess it shouldn't count. Yeah, I mean, absolutely, everybody scored.
It counts. That game was so ridiculous. Like,
it was ridiculous.
I was legit excited for that game, not because I thought it was going to be close, but I thought it would be like the Lions would be able to actually do things. And Blaine Gabbert was in like after the first drive of the third quarter. Like, it was absurd.
Your schedule is super soft to finish. We could say that as well, that it took them some time to get going as a team, but the last few weeks
that was
of the season,
huge, I don't
think
anyone
had
a huge narrative
schedule
down the stretch. Everybody was talking, like, all the national media outlets were like their defense was out of this world, but when's the offense going to pick it up? And they did, and I think that helped them get into a rhythm going into the playoffs where their defense was still fantastic. Which, by the way, we're not really going to talk about it, but their defense is a top 5 unit for me for fantasy this year.
It's got so many playmakers on it, dude.
How many interceptions did they get last year, including down the stretch? And now you're telling me they get to face Jameis twice a year?
Oh, man. Yeah, Devin White is one of my favorite players in the NFL. I just love the way he plays.
Yeah, this is going to be the first time some of these players get to face Jameis in a real game after practicing against him and getting interceptions off him. So imagine.
Torch him twice. But the full circle here is what you said off the top, is you don't know how many shares you're going to have of Evans or Godwin. And I'm kind of with you because, like, I'd rather Keenan. I'd rather Terry McLaurin.
I have a lot of guys.
Both Dallas guys, like CeeDee Lamb and Murray Cooper, like, give me those guys
without
well.
Question, right? So let's go through this. My rankings are up at FTN Fantasy, which are free, by the way. So you can see where Jeff, Brad Evans, Debro, myself, Dom Santorino, you'll have rankings up there, like positional rankings. Yeah. Like, it's awesome. It's real easy to read too. So for me, Mike Evans is my wide receiver 20. I have Julio ahead of him still. I have Godwin 2 spots ahead of him, Cooper Kupp ahead of him, DJ Moore, CeeDee Lamb, Robert Woods, Deontay. Not that I don't like Mike Evans, I just like those guys a little bit more, which is why, you know, I don't see myself getting to maybe you take Antonio Brown late. Like, you're not going to feel great about starting him necessarily unless you're in a deeper, like, 3 or 4 receiver league or whatever, or, you know, 14 team league. But like I said, averaged right around 7 targets per game. They were highly convertible targets and they were drawn up plays for him. Like I said, over 30% of his targets off screens. That could be interesting. So obviously the talent's loaded. Brady's going to benefit again. I do agree, though. I've Godwin just a few spots higher than Evans. But you know that the spike weeks are going to be there for Mike Evans. He's going to have a couple 2 or 3 touchdown weeks. You know, Brady is still going to be the first look for this team when they get in close.
Absolutely.
The backfield, man. What do we do here? Leonard Fournette, playoff Lenny. Both these running backs struggled at times last year, particularly in the passing game, where they dropped a ton of passes. Ronald Jones fumbled and was benched for an entire half at times, which isn't too surprising. Then Leonard Fournette in the playoffs was fantastic. You have to think going into the season, he's going to open as the quote-unquote starter, which means he might just enter the game, be the first player to play the first snap at the running back, and then it's probably going to be a hot-hand approach. And that's dangerous because Ronald Jones has immense talent. I mean, we saw it last year. He is one of the fastest running backs in the NFL. I thought he ran really well last year. It's just the inconsistencies in the passing game and pass protection and stuff like that. And when you're playing with Tom Brady, that's a concern a lot of people had with Ronald Jones heading it last year. You're not going to play. They bring in Giovanni Bernard, who's, you know, a premier pass catching running back. Again, like, for me, it's not close. I'm one of the highest people on Gus Edwards, who goes right after the Tampa Bay backs. I'm taking Gus Edwards over both of them. That might be odd for some people, but that's like, you're getting the similar workload. And like, I don't know. What do we make of this backfield?
It's confusing. And I think that's why, you know, what you're saying about Gus Edwards does make sense. And you say, you know, normally a lot of people won't do that. And, you know, you're probably right. They may not, but we know what one team wants to do in Baltimore, and that's run the rock. And it's going to be a hot hand thing. I mean, just looking at Bruce Arians over the past couple of years, that's just kind of the way it is. And he's frustrated us numerous times here with Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber a couple of times, a couple of years ago, that was frustrating. I mean, Jones had a great season. He really did. He was explosive, to your point. Let me get here in a half point setting. I know in a standard setting, nobody plays standard anymore. He was a top 15 running back. He was RB 16 in a half point setting, 5.1 yards per carry. I mean, that's pretty solid, man. Guy almost had 1,000 yards, basically playing in a committee and getting benched at times because of some of the drops. Like down the stretch, you know, week 8, he has 7 carries. Week 9, he has 3 carries. Week 11, week 12, he has 10 and 9 carries respectively. So not really touching the ball a whole lot there and not getting any grabs over that span. Over the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games, he had 3 catches. That's where Lenny kind of took over. I was very impressed with Fournette in the playoffs. I was extremely impressed. I remember now just sitting there with Debro and Elliot when we did one of the DFS shows. I think it was the game against, I believe it was against the Saints or the Packers, one of the two, and just debating between which guy. And that's the question you always have. We're always going to have that question, right? It's always going to be like that. Who is the guy? Well, it was Fournette last time, but Fournette drops the ball on the first drive. And then now it's Jones. Like I think that's going to continue to happen. But for me, like Fournette, I thought even in the final game against Washington, where he had 19 for 93 and caught 4 balls, I just felt like he was like one of those guys who just looked like he had a chip on his shoulder. Like he's just out of Jacksonville. It was go time now. It was time for him to take over on a very productive offensive team. And he was so darn good in the playoffs, catching balls. You're right. They bring in Gio. Is he going to have the same type of season? Is Fournette going to be a guy that catches 40 balls? I mean, he had 36 last year on 47 targets, but they seem to come late in the season. It's just a stay away, right? I don't want to cop out like with that kind of answer, but it really is. I think Jones has a higher ceiling. I think he's got more upside, especially as a runner. But Fournette, I don't think is going anywhere. I think he's going to be a factor. I still think he's going to be a guy that catches balls more so than Jones. And Gio maybe is just a depth guy, really. Maybe I don't think either of us are getting excited about him. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much he'll really cut into any of these guys, but there's a possibility that he catches 2 or 3 balls a game, and then that cuts into a little bit of Lenny. But yeah, it's a pass for where both of these guys are going right now. RB 30, RB 32, most start right in between them.
Yeah. I wish after Fournette's, you know, playoff run and everything that he was going significantly earlier than Ronald Jones.
Yeah.
But it's not the case because Ronald Jones, like I said, I was impressed with him as a runner. I think he's very talented. And you look at PFF's advanced metrics, there were two qualified running backs last year that averaged more yards after contact per attempt than Ronald Jones last year. And they are, I don't even want to say arguably, they're probably the two best pure runners in the NFL. And it's Derrick Henry, and Nick Chubb. Like,
yeah,
that's totally the company he was in terms of like breaking tackles and making guys miss. Like, he's very talented. So if he was going like a New England Patriots situation where we always kind of every year, whoever's going the latest are the running backs. If he was going much later, I would have interest in Ronald Jones. But again, like, I'd rather have Gus Edwards. I'd rather have the San Francisco running backs, probably Michael Carter. That one's close. I might actually prefer Ronald Jones. I think he has a higher ceiling in that offense. But yeah, we're obviously not thrilled about it. And then we'll close out with Gronk. Oh, real quick, go ahead.
I think there was one thing to add. Yeah, I mean, you were talking about just Cook and or Henry and Chubb. Yeah, I'm looking now at running backs who had more than 5.1 yards per attempt. I mean, there's not many. Henry 5.4, Jones 5.5, Chubb 5.6. Like Kamara's at 5, Cook is at 5, Taylor's at 5. There's something to be said about that, right? And we saw the breakaway speed that he had. Maybe another year in this offense, and if he can protect Tom, and you know, when he's getting thrown the ball and he cannot drop it, you know, maybe there is something to be said about him being, you know, if I'm going to take a flyer on either, it's probably him. We'll say that.
We'll close out Tampa Bay with Gronk. I'll take the L on Gronk. When he got signed, I was not optimistic that he would be more than like a touchdown or bust. He'd be a good tight end every like 5 weeks. And yeah, some of these guys missed time for the offense, but Gronk just looked better than I thought he would. So I'm taking the L on that. I was very, very wrong about that. That being said, though, going into 2021, I'm still not, like, OJ Howard is going to be back. He might play a role here. You know, Gronk is going to compete for targets. He's not going to get more than like five targets per game. He's going to be a touchdown dependent tight end still. Like, I don't have him as a top 15 guy. I think I actually have him at 15. So I'm not thrilled about Gronk. Probably not going to draft him at all because I like other late round tight ends more. Like, and if I'm not going with one of the, you know, top five or six tight ends, just give me Irv Smith, give me Cole Kmet, guys that have a chance to run way more routes and get more targets per game in their offenses. But I just want to take the L because as much as I would love to just say I'm right about everything, that is very false. And I was completely wrong about Rob Gronkowski last year. So taking the L.
I got to take it too. I remember tweeting when he went there, and then the odds from Tampa Bay moved from 14-1 to 10-1. I remember all the mentions, and we all had a good laugh, like, oh, Gronk doesn't, you know, move the needle this much for this team now to be as like legit Super Bowl contenders, even though really they were. I thought the defense was underrated heading into last season, but I just didn't think Gronk would move the needle at all from a fantasy standpoint either. And another tweet that I had, like, his ownership was through the roof after 4 weeks of the season, really not doing anything. I mean, 1.1 fantasy points, 0, 4.8, 2.9, 5.2 over his first five games. And I remember looking at his ownership in leagues across Yahoo, ESPN, whatever you played, and it was roughly like 90%. And there were guys that were doing things like Logan Thomas or Robert Tonyan that were just widely available in leagues, but it was a name value in Gronk with Brady, and everyone just got excited. But then he turned it on, man. Then he went on a little bit of a run, like 5 for 78 in a touchdown, 5 for 62 in a touchdown, 4 for 41 in a touchdown. Those were three straight games where he scored double-digit fantasy points. And if you score a touchdown as a tight end, you're finishing as a top 12 tight end for the week. But yeah, I thought when Antonio Brown came in, that I think he was still efficient from a touchdown standpoint. He was still scoring them. He had three in his final four regular season games, but he only had more than two catches in three games from week 12 on. Like, he wasn't a guy that really caught the ball. Like, week 9 on, he got one ball in week 9, then it was 1, 2, 2, 6, 1, 3, 2, 2. So not super productive. I'm with you. Won't have any shares. You're playing with two tight ends. People did seem to play with two tight ends these days. Fine. As a guy outside the top 15 at the position, he's your second tight end. That's okay. But I don't think there'll ever be really any consistency. And he is another year older. We can say that, right? All the same concerns we had last year, I think they still apply. He was fresh. He took the year off, but this is a guy who's had multiple injuries over the course of his career. I think they know, right? You mentioned OJ Howard coming back. Maybe he gets more reps and more snaps. Maybe he's more involved. They know that they just want to keep Gronk upright, healthy, and make another run.
Speaking of making a run, the Saints tried the last couple of years. I chose them to win the Super Bowl like two of the last 5 years, and they got close and close. And you can say they were a fluke play away, or they were a blown pass interference call away from winning the Super Bowl, but they couldn't close it out. And now Drew Brees, you know, he couldn't ride into the sunset with the Super Bowl. He is retired. Now we have the new look Saints, whether it's going to be, and this is one of the storylines of fantasy football heading into the 2021 season. Who's going to be under center for the Saints, and will it be on a consistent basis? Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill? We know what Sean Payton likes to do with Taysom Hill. If Jameis gets listed as a starter, That's obviously notable. Does not mean Taysom Hill is not playing snaps at quarterback. So let's start with this quarterback situation. D-Bro wrote an awesome piece over at FTN Fantasy breaking down the quarterback situation. So go check that out for sure. A lot of interesting pieces of information there. If Jameis is starting, it's going to be an interesting dynamic with this offense, because during Drew Brees' tenure, it's obviously been a lot of short passing to the running backs, quickly getting the ball out of his hands. And with Jameis, I mean, he's been inside the top five in average depth of target every season of his career. That's who he is. He's an aggressive downfield thrower. the Saints don't exactly have the greatest personnel for that. You know, Michael Thomas can win down the field, but he's more of an intermediate guy. We know that. Traquan can play down the field, but he's not a consistent player. Then it's, you know, outside of Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, this group of pass catchers is very unproven. So, like, Michael Thomas is going to get, I don't care who's under center, he's getting a 27%+ target share. Like, he saw a 30% target share when Taysom Hill was under center last year. The difference I have between the quarterback play is, if Jameis is under center, he will be able to go through progressions better, I think, than Taysom. Because when we saw Taysom under center, and Debro and I talked about this a lot on the DFS podcast when Taysom was the quarterback for that stretch, his first read was Michael Thomas pretty much every play. If Michael Thomas wasn't there, and this is why Kamara's receptions were down a little bit, he wouldn't look to check it down to Kamara. He would just take off and scramble.
Right.
So that I want Jameis under center for this offense. And obviously, if he's under center and they're not playing Taysom in the red zone, I mean, that's going to be huge for Alvin Kamara because Taysom obviously stole some touchdowns. But it's weird. Are Kamara and Michael Thomas being a little bit undervalued? Because Kamara was a consensus, you know, top three pick. There's some concern about his usage in the passing game and potentially his goal line usage if Taysom Hill gets snaps. He's caught over 80 passes in each of his four seasons in the NFL. He's been just one of the best running backs in the NFL. But long way of me saying, how do we think this new quarterback situation impacts the guys like Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas for fantasy?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous, man. I don't know what the hell Sean Payton is going to do. And that makes me a little uneasy.
It would be so much easier to project if they had almost any other head coach.
Right. Yeah. You don't know. What we know about Sean Payton is that, well, one, he's creative for sure. And also he does have this fetish for Sean Payton. He just does, right? We've seen it now over the past couple of years and plays where they get inside the red zone and Drew Brees comes out for Payton. And we got a good look at Payton. I thought potentially Jameis was going to be the guy that he turned to last season when Brees suffered that rib injury. And I thought it would be him. And then it was Hill. And I had to give Payton some credit because Taysom Hill looked pretty good at points, right? He threw the ball downfield with a purpose. His arm was strong. Michael Thomas wasn't dead in the water. He had some decent fantasy games, but I think what you mentioned with Alvin Kamara with the targets, that was real. And I think that is going to be real if it is Taysom Hill under center. Because there's not going to be a lot of checkdowns that Alvin Kamara has gotten over the years. I mean, you mentioned the catches that this guy has had. I mean, 80 plus in each of his 4 years in the NFL. That is amazing. 81, 81, 81, 83. He has been so productive through the air. But early on in the season, it was a guy that was getting double-digit targets, 9 catches, 13, 8, 8, 9. You could just bank on 5. You knew you were going to get 5. But from week 11, 0, week 12, 1, week 13, 2, then the big blow-up game against Philly, they played from behind in that game. It was Taysom Hill under center. He had 7 grabs and then 6 to wrap up the final two games of the season. I would just, if you're a dynasty owner of Kamara, which I am, Michael Thomas, if you're a dynasty owner, I think you want Jameis Winston under center just because of what we've seen before, him checking the ball down the field. And I think they are interested in him, right? Because they could have drafted a quarterback. There were some rumors about Russell Wilson. They could have maybe went and got him. Easier said than done. But they decided to bring back Jameis here and have him sit behind and learn the offense for a year under Brees, under Taysom, get a couple snaps. I think it is going to be him. And I think if it is him, it's good news for everybody. I think Kamara would be locked and loaded as a top 5 running back. I think Michael Thomas, upside to be a top 5, not going to get drafted as that guy, but still wide receiver 1 and going, you know, near the back end of wide receiver 1, like wide receiver 10 on average just right now. But this is going to be, I think, one of the most intriguing battles in camp, and it's probably not going to be answered until, you know, preseason, honestly. Like, this is big for both guys in camp. It's going to be a battle that we'll have to keep a close eye on. But like I said, I think it's going to be Jameis. I think it should be Jameis, and if it is, I think it's good news for everybody. But if it is Hill, man, if we're sitting here before drafts really get going and it is Taysom Hill announced as a starter, Alvin Kamara is going to fall down draft boards. Like, Henry's going to go ahead of him, Saquon, Zeke, these guys are all going to go ahead of him, and I think it's all fair. Maybe Taylor, and then you're looking at maybe a potential value near the end of the first on Alvin Kamara, what he can do, and the quarterback switch could happen. You know that it could be Winston 1 week and then they can flip-flop, but the bottom line is that Taysom is always going to get snaps. Don't you agree? He's always going to get on the field.
I mean, he had that interesting contract situation. Like, regardless of that, like, they obviously love him there. If you're willing to take him off the field, and it was on third downs, it was on like third and manageables, and Drew Brees would be running off the field, and you're like, if you're taking one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and I know he fell off the last couple years, I get that, but regardless, if you're taking Drew Brees out of the game on an important, and there were a lot of important third downs too, for Taysom Hill, it doesn't really. It doesn't say as much as what you think about Drew Brees, more so as what Sean Payton just thinks about Taysom Hill and how much he loves him. So, yeah, he's going to be playing. There's going to be times where Alvin Kamara is going to be on the sideline or watching Taysom Hill running from 5 yards out, and you're going to be tilted. But, yeah, Kamara by no means is a bust. And even if Taysom's under center, I'm not moving Michael Thomas regardless. Like I said, 30% target share with Taysom Hill under center last year. I thought he was actually a better intermediate passer than Twitter and everybody thinks he was. Like, he obviously gets made fun of. His deep ball is terrible. Like, he throws an absolute duck. But I don't care if Michael Thomas isn't running a ton of deep routes. And he's like, maybe they change their offensive philosophy if Jameis is under center. Okay, that fits the offense better with Jameis. But if Taysom's under center, they're not running deep routes with their best offensive player. Well, second best offensive player. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be among the league leaders in target share without question. I feel like Michael Thomas, he didn't score last year until the playoff game. I feel like at worst, he's going to be a guy that gets you 6 for 70 every game almost.
Yeah.
Every single game. And he's going to score touchdowns this year. He's too talented not to. That's going to happen. The Saints offense isn't going to be like top 5 or 6 or anything. They're going to be average to slightly, maybe like slightly below average at worst. The offensive line is still very good. Michael Thomas is still very good despite the kind of lost season we had last year from him. He's my wide receiver 7. In PPR leagues, I wouldn't be surprised if he led the NFL in catches this year. I really wouldn't. And the Saints defense has kind of slowly taken some hits. Their secondary outside of Marshon Lattimore, not exactly great. They lost some pieces of their pass rush with, you know, Trey Hendrickson, who had a great year last year. I'm not saying their defense is going to be bad. There'll be some games that they're going to be playing from behind, though, and that'll help Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. Do we have any sleeper pass catchers from this offense? Traquan Smith and Adam Troutman, really the only ones that stand out. Traquan, only if Jameis is under center. He's their deep threat. That would fit with Jameis, who, like I said, top 5 in average depth of target every season he's been in the NFL. And then Adam Troutman. I mean, they're very high on this kid. Jared Cook is out of town. Emmanuel Sanders is out of town. There is a very, very, very interesting situation with Adam Troutman now and his second season in New Orleans.
Yeah, I like Troutman. I absolutely. I remember when they drafted him, I was thinking, okay, dynasty, like this guy in a couple of years, you know, with Cook, you know, leaving the team, that he could be something in this offense. And I like what you were saying about Michael Thomas from a PPR standpoint. I think he could be a guy that just racks up maybe 10 catches a game, you know, maybe not, you know, 100 yards all the time, but I think that could be there because I do have some concerns with this offense. Like, who's going to step up as the two? Like, can we say Kamara is the two? Sure, but which wide receiver, which pass catcher? Like, they bring in Nick Vannett. Who really cares about him? Like, Troutman, there's an opportunity for him to be a guy. He's super athletic. I liked him coming out of college, so I'm intrigued with him. I'm interested in him, but I can't say the same for Traquan Smith or Marcus Callaway or Deontay Harris. Or I just don't have much confidence. Like, who is going to be that guy and steps up and can be the number two? Because they didn't draft anybody. They lost Emmanuel Sanders, who, you know, chipped in and was fine at times. You mentioned Cook is gone. So somebody really does need to step up and be the number two in this offense. I'm not confident on who that guy could be. I want to say it's Traquan, but it's not like he's cheap. He's not totally free in drafts. And there was a lot of inconsistencies in his game. There were some times where I hardly even noticed this guy on the field. So I don't know. I probably have a share or two of him, but, you know, in deeper leagues, I think Troutman could be interesting. I'm almost certain we'll talk about him in DFS this season.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued by Adam Troutman, especially just, you know, if he was a wide receiver, it'd be different because the position's so deep. But tight end, like, it's just bad. Like, ranking the tight ends like 12 to 20 are just absolute crapshoot. So
it's just about touchdown opportunities at that point. He could,
yeah, like you said, if you score a touchdown, you're going to be a top, you know, 10 tight end on the week. Which, again, that's not like the greatest endorsement, but that's just what the position looks like right now. Yeah. All right, let's close it out with the Carolina Panthers, a very interesting team heading into 2021. They have a new quarterback under center, Sam Darnold. They acquired him via trade during the offseason. And I don't care what anybody says. I think this is an upgraded quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater was not very good last year, especially on the deep ball. We'll talk about that. Let's get the obvious out of the way, though. Any concerns about Christian McCaffrey drafting him first overall, coming off the injury-plagued season? Still only 25 years old, going to catch roughly 90 passes, not going to come off the field. Is there really anything to say about Christian McCaffrey?
No, I don't have any concerns at all with CMC. He could be RB1. I think you and I chatted on Mean Streets that I wouldn't judge anybody if they wanted to go Henry at one. Honestly, I really wouldn't. But in a full point PPR league, I don't think there's any question. And even in a half point setting, Christian McCaffrey, I think there's a chance maybe that he, you know, his catches come down just slightly only because there's a lot of weapons as a new quarterback and maybe they want to keep him fresh. Like it's possible maybe. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's just overthinking it. But again, I have no issues. The guy's an absolute stud.
Yeah, I mean, he's still my number one player in fantasy. If I have any first overall selection in any draft, I'm taking Christian McCaffrey. Let's go to the receivers, though. I am super interested in this pass catching group.
Me too.
I love DJ Moore. I think he was used relatively poorly last year. And it's not even that it's really Joe Brady's fault, because I think a lot of that had to do with changing how they used Robbie Anderson, which obviously impacted DJ Moore. So we have Sam Darnold back. He obviously spent time with Robbie Anderson with the Jets in 2019. This is a completely different Robbie Anderson, though. In 2019, Robbie Anderson, when he was with the Jets that year with Darnold, he averaged 11.3 yards before the catch per reception. He had a 19.9% slot rate and a 15.7 ADOT. Last year, his yards before the catch per reception, remember, it was 11.3 in 2019, down to 6.3 last year. So he was not used deep down the field at all. 32% slot rate, so, you know, 19% the year before. And his ADOT went down from 15.7 to 9.7. So he was the intermediate guy in this offense, running the slants, the drags, everything like that. DJ Moore was up there in terms of yards before the catch per reception, higher ADOT. Adding Terrace Marshall, and I hope, means he can play out wide more and run down the field more. I know he played in the slot last year at LSU. I think that was more so because LSU just lost all their offensive skill players the past couple years via the draft. And you just want to put your best players in position to succeed, which would mean putting them in the slot. Not that he can't play in the slot, and he will play in the slot a little bit. But I think I can almost guarantee that DJ Moore is in the slot more than the 23% rate he was last year. If that goes up to like 40%, that's going to be great for him, especially because Darnold, throughout his career, has targeted the slot at a very high rate.
Yeah.
So I am all in on a DJ Moore bounce back season. Still like Robbie Anderson, where he's going, because he's going outside the top 30, and he still has top. We saw, despite how unimpressive the quarterback play was last year, this offense still had two top 20 or three top 30 receivers. And yes, McCaffrey could hurt one of them. But to say that DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson can't be top 25 or 30 receivers again with Sam Darnold, I'm not ready to say that. I'm not out on Darnold, especially with Joe Brady, who I really believe in as a play caller. And this is clearly, without even question, the best group of pass catchers he's ever had.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, not even question. It's not even close. I like Sam Darnold. I like him, and I'm going to have shares of him in super flex leagues. He's outside the top 20 if leaving drafts as my third quarterback. I mean, he doesn't need to do too much to improve. He leaves Adam Gase and the Jets and no weapons, which you alluded to, and to an offensive genius, I think, in Brady, and all kinds of weapons and dudes who can catch and just make plays after the catch. Like, those are guys. You look at Moore, you mentioned these three guys, and Moore, Robbie, and Curtis Samuel finishing as top 25 wide receivers last year. They had a combined 10 touchdowns, 10 touchdowns between three of them, and they still just finished as wide receiver twos, solid wide receiver twos. They didn't score. They didn't really find the end zone.
I remember Robbie Anderson scored week one, first game of the season. It was like a long touchdown, and he didn't score for like 8 weeks after that.
I think it was him and Diggs. I kept looking at it. I think all the way up until week 12, they're the only players in the NFL who had at least four catches in every game. And then, Robbie fell off towards the end of the season, but you just knew what you were going to get, and it was just he was so undervalued, he was so underrated. Nobody was talking about him from a season-long standpoint. It took forever for people to fully grab him. I think a lot of people were looking in 2019 as the breakout season. He's obviously familiar with Sam Darnold, and he had a couple nice moments with Sam, especially in 2017. He almost had a 1,000-yard season and seven touchdowns, so they're familiar with each other. But it was surprising for me, honestly, to see Robbie Anderson be that productive. And that's just credit to the play calling, I think, because I think we're on the same page when it comes to Teddy Bridgewater. So I think this is an upgrade. And for Sam Darnold, again, just get the ball to these guys in space, like CMC, Robbie Anderson, Terrace Marshall, DJ Moore. I believe he's going to play in the slot. And I just love this guy. Like, how can you not like him? Besides the fact that he hasn't really found the end zone too much in his career, is that, man, he is just so fun to watch. Like, he runs crisp routes. He's got great hands. He's extremely explosive. I thought he finished really, really strong. And you're right. When you say bounce back, I agree with you. But it's, you know, just shy of 1,200 yards is a pretty solid season for a guy who only had 66 grabs. And then the year before, 87 grabs and just shy of 1,200 yards, too. So a career season for him in terms of just yardage and yards per target and yards per reception. We'll see him find the end zone, I'm sure. But it's not something I'm worried about. Down the stretch, 96 yards, 127, 131, 101. Those were like five of his final seven games. So I'm in on all these guys, more so DJ. Like Sam, we love CMC. And I like Terrace Marshall. I think it's obviously him and Brady, they're familiar with each other. I think it's a great win from a dynasty standpoint. I mean, this year, next year, we're probably talking about them too, because I'd say Robbie Anderson is probably out the door. I think this is his final year of the contract there. But, you know, a lot of weapons for Sam Darnold to succeed in this offense. And, you know, he's got to feel pretty good and confident with a new start. It's going to be fun to watch this team, I think, offensively. And I like, you know, their defense. They've added some pieces. Last year, I believe it was all defensive players that they drafted. So I've liked their draft over the past couple of years. I thought that they've picked some solid players. So I think that they're, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to be a playoff team, but I think that they're going to compete, man. I think they're going to hang around games.
Yeah, I'm really interested in Terrace Marshall, too. I think the fit with Joe Brady obviously makes sense. They spent time together in 2019. Joe Brady's going to know exactly how to use him in the offense. And Curtis Samuel's gone. I mean, he nearly 100 targets need replacing with exactly. Curtis Samuel being gone. I think Terrace Marshall is not just like a dynasty guy in redraft leagues towards the end of your draft. Take Terrace Marshall. Like, outside of what, DeVonta Smith and Jamar Chase, I wouldn't be shocked if Terrace Marshall was the wide receiver three among rookies at the end of the season.
I could see that.
I would bet on Jalen Waddle ahead of him and maybe somebody else, but I like the fit. I like the offense. And again, I'm such a believer in Joe Brady, which is why I think Darnold's going to have a really nice season. And I think he's going to help all these pass catchers have strong seasons too.
Marshall seems like such an obvious pick right around like wide receiver 69 for me. Like, there's Mims, Crowder, Elijah Moore, Rondell Moore, John Brown, Sterling Shepard, Paris Campbell, Terrace Marshall, Kadarius Toney, Christian Kirk, Tre'Quan Smith, Josh Reynolds. Like, that's all the range are. Like, he just stands out to me there.
Yeah, I've been drafting him a lot already, so yeah. I don't really see that slowing down. And then they have no tight end to speak of. Logan Thomas literally just runs routes for fun. They have Dan Arnold now, who is a better player, but he's like a super deep sleeper because the tight end position is bad. And he was legitimately really efficient last year, but again, different offense, more competition for targets, I would say, than last year at Arizona, where it was Hopkins and then, you know, Arnold would be second on the team targets for some games. Not so much can happen this year, but maybe just write his name down in deeper leagues. Maybe he becomes a waiver wire guy because, like, they're gonna need something from their tight ends. Like Logan Thomas, like I said, or Ian Thomas, was just running routes just to run routes. So he was not very involved. Maybe that changes with Dan Arnold, who they bring in from Arizona. All right, man. NFC South broken down. That'll do it for all of the NFC and AFC divisional previews. It's crazy that it's still the middle of June, and it feels like it's going to be forever until the season starts, which, again, like I said, it feels like, but we're approaching like 90 days now, so it is getting to that time. Meanie, appreciate you as always, man. What do you got going on over at FTN? Obviously, Mean Streets. If you want to check out the episode you and I recorded on Monday, that's up on the YouTube channel and everything, but what else you got in the works at FTN?
Yeah, that was fun, man. We're doing Mean Streets about three times a week, and it is really just gearing up for football. It's all football the rest of the way. You guys know, I don't know. I'm a big hockey guy, and hockey's basically over. NBA is over. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a fun year. Playoffs actually been pretty tough. I've lost some units lately, but it's all good. Yeah, but the NHL and the NBA playoffs are over, so it's really just as soon as – and it's weird because usually they're just done now, and it's June, and it's just baseball, and it's full NFL mode. But Mean Streets just really going to continue to grab studs like yourself from FTN and just, you know, get their thoughts and, you know, preview some teams like you've been doing, taking a look at just ADP. It's just going to be full NFL over on Main Street. So it is a free show. We had a blast, man, on Monday. It was a lot of fun to get together and chat with you and, you know, some rookie backs and dynasty targets and whatnot, just kind of pick your brain about, you know, the NFL and drafts like that. So, you know, lots happening at FTN, man. I mentioned the new show here. We are recording tomorrow, so it won't be live, but it's a new, it's called FTN Datacast with myself and Brett Whitefield. So it's going to be fun. We're doing a lot of cool things over at FTN. Yeah. I appreciate you having me, man. It's a blast. I love you guys. It's a great podcast, man. One of my fun, favorite podcasts to listen to or throw you guys on. You guys both bring the energy and the intelligence off the charts. So happy to fill in for D-Bro, whenever he is out of town.
Yeah. Always appreciate that, man. Make sure everybody's following Chris on Twitter at Chris Meany. Again, another congrats to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Onward and upward. And again, yeah, like, subscribe to the podcast. We're still giving away that Calvin Ridley jersey. Leave a rating and review on iTunes and you're entered to win that. Once we get to, I believe, 150, which I think we're like a couple away, we are giving that Calvin Ridley jersey to a lucky listener / reviewer. Debra will be back on Wednesday. I'll be recording later tonight with Chris Allen, who does a ton of great content over at 4 for 4. He does content at Number Fire, NBC Sports Edge. We're gonna be talking about some early candidates that might be busts in fantasy football in 2021. That'll be uploaded on Wednesday, so we'll have plenty of great stuff even without Debra. Then of course the man, the myth, the legend will be back on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday to close out the week. Have a good one. That'll do it for us. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.